We'll continue with the theme of commitment and what one's committing to, and how to foster that. The next sutta is Samyutta 35, sutta number 241. It's the simile of the log. Another well-known sutta, and it's really about the fact that practice is capable of taking us to the goal, but we also have to be wary of the pitfalls. On one occasion, the Blessed One was dwelling at Kosambi, on the bank of the river Ganges. The Blessed One saw a great log being carried along by the current of the river Ganges. And he addressed the bhikkhus thus, "Do you see, bhikkhus, that great log being carried along by the current of the river Ganges?"
"Yes, Venerable Sir."
"If, bhikkhus, that log does not veer towards the near shore, does not veer towards the far shore, does not sink in midstream, does not get cast up on high ground, does not get caught by human beings, does not get caught by non-human beings, does not get caught in a whirlpool, and does not become inwardly rotten, it will slant, slope, and incline towards the ocean. For what reason? Because the current of the river Ganges slopes, slants, and inclines towards the ocean. So too, bhikkhus, if you do not veer towards the near shore, do not veer towards the far shore, do not sink in midstream, do not get cast up on high ground, do not get caught by human beings, do not get caught by non-human beings, do not get caught in a whirlpool, and do not become inwardly rotten, you will slant, slope, and incline towards Nibbana. For what reason? Because right view slants, slopes, and inclines towards Nibbana. When this was said, a certain bhikkhu asked the Blessed One, "What, Venerable Sir, is the near shore? What is the far shore? What is sinking in midstream? What is getting cast up on high ground? What is getting caught by human beings? What is getting caught by non-human beings? What is getting caught in a whirlpool? What is inward rottenness?" "What is inward rottenness?" "The near shore, bhikkhu, this is a designation for the six internal sense bases. The far shore, this is a designation for the six external sense bases. Sinking in midstream, this is a designation for delight and lust. Getting cast up on high ground, this is a designation for the conceit I am. And what, bhikkhu, is getting caught by human beings? Here someone lives in association with lay people. He rejoices with them and sorrows with them. He is happy when they are happy and sad when they are sad. And he involves himself in their affairs and duties. This is called getting caught by human beings. And what, bhikkhu, is getting caught by non-human beings? Here someone lives a holy life with the aspiration to be reborn into a certain order of devas thinking, by this virtue or vow or austerity or holy life, I will become a deva or one among the devas. This is called getting caught by non-human beings. Getting caught in a whirlpool, this, bhikkhu, is a designation for the five cords of sensual pleasure. And what, bhikkhu, is inward rottenness? Here someone is immoral, one of evil character, of impure and suspect behavior, secretive in his acts, no ascetic, though claiming to be one, not a celibate, though claiming to be one, inwardly rotten, corrupt, depraved. This is called inward rottenness. Now on that occasion the cowherd Nanda was standing near the Blessed One. He then said to the Blessed One, "Venerable Sir, I will not veer towards the near shore. I will not veer towards the far shore. I will not sink in midstream. I will not get cast up on high ground. I will not get caught by human beings. I will not get caught by non-human beings. I will not get caught in a whirlpool. I will not become inwardly rotten. May I receive the going forth unto the Blessed One. May I receive the higher ordination." In that case, Nanda, return the cows to their owners. "The cows will go back of their own accord, Venerable Sir, out of attachment to the calves." Return the cows to their owners, Nanda. Then the cowherd Nanda returned the cows to their owners, came back to the Blessed One and said, The cows have been returned to their owners, Venerable Sir. May I receive the going forth under the Blessed One. May I receive the higher ordination. Then the cowherd Nanda received the going forth under the Blessed One, and he received the higher ordination. And soon, not long after his higher ordination, dwelling alone, withdrawn, diligent, ardent, and resolute, the Venerable Nanda became one of the Arahants. This next sutta is from the Majjhima Nikaya, Majjhima 5, and the Anangana Sutta, Without Blemishes. And there's a sense of making an honest appraisal of one's defaults or defects, and when one makes that honest appraisal, then one is able to put forth effort. Thus have I heard. On one occasion, the Blessed One was living at Savati, in Jetas Grove, Anathapindika's park. There the Venerable Sariputta addressed the bhikkhus thus. Friends, bhikkhus. Friend, they replied. The Venerable Sariputta said this. Friends, there are these four kinds of persons found existing in the world. What for? Here some person with a blemish does not understand it as it actually is thus. I have a blemish in myself. Here some person with a blemish understands it as it actually is thus. I have a blemish in myself. Here some person with no blemish does not understand as it actually is thus. I have no blemish in myself. Here some person with no blemish understands it as it actually is thus. I have no blemish in myself. Herein, the person with a blemish who does not understand it as it actually is thus, I have a blemish in myself, is called the inferior of these two persons with a blemish. Herein, the person with a blemish who understands it as it actually is thus, I have a blemish in myself, is called the superior of these two persons with a blemish. Herein, the person with no blemish who does not understand it as it actually is thus, I have no blemish, is called the inferior of these two persons with no blemish. Herein, the person with no blemish, who understands it as it actually is thus, I have no blemish, is called the superior of these two persons with no blemish. When this was said, the Venerable Mahamoggallana asked the Venerable Sariputta, Friend Sariputta, what is the cause and reason why of these two persons with a blemish? One is called the inferior, and one is called the superior. What is the cause and reason why of these two persons with no blemish? One is called the inferior, and one is called the superior. Herein, friend, when a person with a blemish does not understand it as it actually is thus, I have a blemish in myself, it can be expected that he will not arouse zeal, make effort, or instigate energy to abandon that blemish, and that he will die with lust, hate, and delusion, with a blemish, with mind defiled. Suppose a bronze dish were brought from a shop, or a smithy covered with dirt and stains, and the owners neither used it nor had it cleaned, but put it away in a dusty corner. Would the bronze dish thus get more defiled and stained later on? Yes, friend. So too, friend, when a person with a blemish does not understand it as it actually is thus, I have a blemish in myself, it can be expected that he will not arouse zeal, make effort, or instigate energy to abandon that blemish, and that he will die with lust, hate, and delusion, with a blemish, with mind defiled. Herein, when a person with a blemish understands it as it actually is thus, I have a blemish in myself, it can be expected that he will arouse zeal, make effort, and instigate energy to abandon that blemish, and that he will die without lust, hate, and delusion, without blemish, with mind undefiled. Suppose a bronze dish were brought from a shop or smithy, covered with dirt and stains, and the owners used it and had it cleaned and did not put it in a dusty corner. Would the bronze dish thus get cleaner and brighter later on? Yes, friend. So too, friend, when a person with a blemish understands it as it actually is thus, I have a blemish in myself, it can be expected that he will die with his mind undefiled. Herein, when a person with no blemish does not understand it as it actually is thus, I have no blemish in myself, it can be expected that he will give attention to the sign of the beautiful, that by his doing so, lust will infect his mind, and that he will die with lust, hate, and delusion, with a blemish, with mind defiled. Suppose a bronze dish were brought from a shop or smithy, clean and bright, and the owners neither used it nor had it cleaned, but put it in a dusty corner. Would the bronze dish thus get more defiled and more stained later on? Yes, friend. So too, friend, when a person with no blemish does not understand it as it actually is thus, I have no blemish in myself, it can be expected that he will give attention to the sign of the beautiful, that by his doing so, lust will infect his mind, and that he will die with lust, hate, and delusion, with a blemish, with mind defiled. Herein, when a person with no blemish understands it as it actually is thus, I have no blemish in myself, it can be expected that he will not give attention to the sign of the beautiful, that by his not doing so, lust will not infect his mind, and that he will die without lust, hate, and delusion, without blemish, with mind undefiled. Suppose a bronze dish were brought from a shop or smithy, clean and bright, and the owners used it and had it cleaned and did not put it in a dusty corner. Would the bronze dish thus get cleaner and brighter later on? Yes, friend. So too, friend, when a person with no blemish understands it as it actually is thus, I have no blemish in myself, it can be expected that he will die with mind undefiled. This is the cause and reason why of these two persons with a blemish, one is called the inferior and one is called the superior. This is the cause and reason why of these two persons with no blemish, one is called the inferior and one is called the superior. Blemish. Blemish is said, friend. But what is this word blemish a term for? Blemish, friend, is a term for the spheres of evil, unwholesome wishes. It is possible that a bhikkhu here might wish, if I commit an offense, let the bhikkhus not know that I have committed an offense. And it is possible that the bhikkhus come to know that that bhikkhu has committed an offense. So he is angry and bitter thus, the bhikkhus know I have committed an offense. The anger and bitterness are both a blemish. It is possible that a bhikkhu here might wish, I have committed an offense. The bhikkhus should admonish me in private, not in the midst of the sangha. And it is possible that the bhikkhus admonish that bhikkhu in the midst of the sangha, not in private. So he is angry and bitter thus, the bhikkhus admonish me in the midst of the sangha, not in private. The anger and bitterness are both a blemish. It is possible that a bhikkhu here might wish, I have committed an offense. A person who is my equal should admonish me, not a person who is not my equal. And it is possible that a person not his equal admonishes him, not a person his equal. So he is angry and bitter thus, a person not my equal admonishes me, not a person my equal. The anger and bitterness are both a blemish. It is possible that a bhikkhu here might wish, oh, that the teacher might teach the Dhamma to the bhikkhus by asking a series of questions of me, not of some other bhikkhu. And it is possible that the teacher teaches the Dhamma to the bhikkhus by asking a series of questions of some other bhikkhu, not of that bhikkhu. So he is angry and bitter thus. The teacher teaches the Dhamma to the bhikkhus by asking a series of questions of some other bhikkhu, not of me. The anger and bitterness are both a blemish. It is possible that a bhikkhu here might wish, oh, that the bhikkhus might enter the village for alms, putting me in the forefront, not some other bhikkhu. And it is possible that the bhikkhus enter the village for alms, putting some other bhikkhu in the forefront, not that bhikkhu. So he is angry and bitter thus. The bhikkhus enter the village for alms, putting some other bhikkhu in the forefront, not me. The anger and bitterness are both a blemish. It is possible that a bhikkhu here might wish, oh, that I might get the best seat, the best water, the best alms food in the refectory, not some other bhikkhu. And it is possible that some other bhikkhu gets the best seat, and so on. It is possible that a bhikkhu here might wish, oh, that I might give the blessing in the refectory after the meal, not some other bhikkhu. And it is possible that some other bhikkhu gives the blessing. It is possible that a bhikkhu here might wish, oh, that I might teach the Dhamma to the bhikkhus, that I might teach the Dhamma to the bhikkhunis, men lay followers, women lay followers, those visiting the monastery, not some other bhikkhu. And it is possible that some other bhikkhu teaches the Dhamma. It is possible that a bhikkhu here might wish, oh, that the bhikkhus, bhikkhunis, men lay followers, women lay followers, might honor, respect, revere, and venerate me, not some other bhikkhu. And it is possible that they honor some other bhikkhu. It is possible that a bhikkhu here might wish, oh, that I might be the one to get a superior robe, superior alms food, a superior resting place, superior medicinal requisites, not some other bhikkhu. And it is possible that some other bhikkhu is the one to get superior medicinal requisites, not that bhikkhu. So he is angry and bitter thus. Another bhikkhu is one to get superior requisites, not me. The anger and the bitterness are both a blemish. Blemish, friend, is a term for the spheres of these evil, unwholesome wishes. If the spheres of these evil, unwholesome wishes are seen and heard to be unabandoned in any bhikkhu, then for all he may be a forest dweller, a frequenter of remote abodes, an alms food eater, a house-to-house seeker, a refuse rag wearer, a wearer of rough robes, those are Dutanga practices in the Buddhist time, still his fellows in the holy life do not honor, respect, revere, and venerate him. Why is that? Because the spheres of these evil, unwholesome wishes are seen and heard to be unabandoned in that venerable one. Suppose a bronze dish were brought from a shop or a smithy, clean and bright, and the owners put the carcass of a snake or a dog or a human being in it, and covering it with another bowl, went back to the market. Then people seeing it said, "What is that you are carrying about like a treasure?" Then raising the lid and uncovering it, they looked in, and as soon as they saw, they were inspired with such loathing, repugnance, and disgust that even those who were hungry would not want to eat, not to speak of those who were full. So too, if the spheres of these evil, unwholesome wishes are seen and heard to be unabandoned in any bhikkhu, then for all he may be a forest dweller, and so on, still his fellows in the holy life do not honor, respect, revere, and venerate him. Why is that? Because the spheres of these evil, unwholesome wishes are seen and heard to be unabandoned in that venerable one. If the spheres of these evil, unwholesome wishes are seen and heard to be abandoned in any bhikkhu, then for all he may be a village dweller, an acceptor of invitations, a wearer of robes given him by householders, yet his fellows in the holy life honor, respect, revere, and venerate him. Why is that? Because the spheres of these evil, unwholesome wishes are seen and heard to be abandoned in that venerable one. Suppose a bronze dish were brought from a shop or smithy, clean and bright, and the owners put clean boiled rice and various soups and sauces into it, and covering it with another bowl, went back to the market. Then people seeing it said, "What is that you are carrying about like a treasure?" Then raising the lid and uncovering it, they looked in, and as soon as they saw, they were inspired with such liking, appetite, and relish that even those who were full would want to eat, not to speak of those who were hungry. So too, friend, if the spheres of these evil, unwholesome wishes are seen and heard to be abandoned in any bhikkhu, then for all he may be a village dweller, an acceptor of invitations, a wearer of robes given him by householders, yet his fellows in the holy life honor, respect, revere, and venerate him. Why is that? Because the spheres of these evil, unwholesome wishes are seen and heard to be abandoned in that venerable one. When this was said, the Venerable Mahamoggallana said to the Venerable Sariputta, "A simile occurs to me, friend Sariputta." "State it, friend Moggallana." On one occasion, friend, I was living at the hill fort at Rajagaha. Then when it was morning, I dressed, and taking my bowl and outer robe, I went into Rajagaha for alms. Now on that occasion, Samiti, the cartwright's son, was planing a fellow, and the Achivaka Panduputta, son of a former cartwright, was standing by. Then this thought arose in the Achivaka Panduputta's mind. Oh, that the Samiti, the cartwright's son, might plane this bend, this twist, this fault out of the fellow, so that it would be without bends, twists, or faults, and come to consist purely of heartwood. And just as this thought came to pass in his mind, so did Samiti, the cartwright's son, plane that bend, that twist, that fault, out of the fellow. Then the Achivaka Panduputta, son of a former cartwright, was glad, and he voiced his gladness thus. He planes just as if he knew my heart with his heart. So too, friend, there are persons who are faithless and have gone forth from the home life into homelessness, not out of faith, but seeking a livelihood, who are fraudulent, deceitful, treacherous, haughty, hollow, personally vain, rough-tongued, loose-spoken, unguarded in their sense faculties, immoderate in eating, undevoted to wakefulness, unconcerned with recluseship, not greatly respectful of training, luxurious, careless, leaders in backsliding, neglectful of seclusion, lazy, wanting in energy, unmindful, not fully aware, unconcentrated, with straying minds, devoid of wisdom, drivelers. The Venerable Sariputta, with his discourse on the Dhamma, planes out their faults just as if he knew my heart with his heart. But there are clansmen who have gone forth out of faith from the home life into homelessness, who are not fraudulent, deceitful, treacherous, haughty, hollow, personally vain, rough-tongued or loose-spoken, who are guarded in their sense faculties, moderate in eating, devoted to wakefulness, concerned with recluseship, greatly respectful of training, not luxurious or careless, who are keen to avoid backsliding, leaders in seclusion, energetic, resolute, established in mindfulness, fully aware, concentrated, with unified minds, possessing wisdom, not drivelers. These, on hearing the Venerable Sariputta's discourse on the Dhamma, drink it in and eat it, as it were, by word and thought. Good indeed it is that he makes his fellows in the holy life emerge from the unwholesome and establish themselves in the wholesome. Just as a woman or man, young, youthful, fond of adornments, with head bathed, having received a garland of lotuses, jasmine, or roses, would take it with both hands and place it on the head, so too there are clansmen who have gone forth out of faith. These, on hearing the Venerable Sariputta's discourse on the Dhamma, drink it in and eat it, as it were, by word and thought. Good indeed it is that he makes his fellows in the holy life emerge from the unwholesome and establish themselves in the wholesome. Thus it was that these two great beings rejoiced in each other's good words. All right. The next one is an excerpt from Majjhima 19, Dvaita Vitakka Sutta, Two Kinds of Thought. Attending to the content and possible result of thought, and it's the Buddha relating his own experience. Bhikkhus, before my enlightenment, while I was still only an unenlightened bodhisattva, it occurred to me, suppose that I divide my thoughts into two classes. Then I set on one side thoughts of sensual desire, ill will, and cruelty, and I set on the other side thoughts of renunciation, non-ill will, non-cruelty. As I abided thus, diligent, ardent, and resolute, a thought of sensual desire, or ill will, or cruelty arose in me. I understood thus, this thought of desire, ill will, or cruelty has arisen in me. This leads to my own affliction, to others' affliction, and to the affliction of both. It obstructs wisdom, causes difficulties, and leads away from Nibbana. When I considered thus, it subsided in me. Whenever a thought of desire, etc., arose in me, I abandoned it, removed it, did away with it. So that the sensual desire, ill will, and cruelty are the akusala, kamapada, the basis of unwholesome mental karma. And similarly, the Buddha divides it, the basis of, say, three wholesome and unwholesome classes of karma in terms of the basic activities of body, speech, and mind. There's three bodily karma sort of that conform to the taking of life, stealing, the third precept against sexual misconduct, and then the four kinds of unskillful speech, and then the three kinds of thought, kusala and akusala, kamapara, bases or foundations of karma. Just as in the last month of the rainy season, in the autumn, when the crops thicken, a cowherd would guard his cows by constantly tapping and poking them on this side and that, with a stick to check and curb them. Why is that? Because he sees that he could be flogged, imprisoned, fined, or blamed. So too I saw in unwholesome states the danger, degradation, and defilement, and in wholesome states the blessing of renunciation, the aspect of cleansing. Then the thought of renunciation or ill will or non-ill will or non-cruelty arose in me. I understood thus. This does not lead to my own affliction, or to others' affliction, or to the affliction of both. It aids wisdom, does not cause difficulties, and leads to Nibbana. If I think and ponder upon this thought, even for a night, even for a day, even for a night and day, I see nothing to fear from it. But with excessive thinking and pondering, I might tire my body. And when the body is tired, the mind becomes disturbed. And when the mind is disturbed, it is far from concentration. So I steadied my mind internally, quieted it, brought it to singleness, and concentrated it. Why is that? So that my mind should not be disturbed. Because whatever a bhikkhu frequently thinks and ponders upon, that will become the inclination of his mind. If he frequently thinks and ponders upon thoughts of renunciation, non-ill will, non-cruelty, he has abandoned the thought of sensual desire, ill will, and cruelty. Just as in the last month of the hot season, when all the crops have been brought inside the villages, a cowherd would guard his cows while staying at the root of a tree or out in the open, since he needs only to be mindful that the cows are there. So too there was need only to be mindful that those states were there. Tireless energy was aroused in me, and unremitting mindfulness was established. My body was tranquil and untroubled, my mind concentrated and unified. And this next one is sort of follows on from that last one. This is Anguttara 4, Sutta number 263. Endowed with any of four qualities, a monk isn't fit to stay in isolated forests and wilderness dwellings. Which four? He is endowed with thoughts of sensuality, with thoughts of ill will, with thoughts of harmfulness, and he is a person of weak discernment, dull, a drooling idiot. Endowed with any of these four qualities, a monk isn't fit to stay in isolated forest and wilderness dwellings. Endowed with four qualities, a monk is fit to stay in isolated forest and wilderness dwellings. Which four? He is endowed with thoughts of renunciation, with thoughts of non-ill will, with thoughts of harmlessness, and he is a discerning person, not dull, not a drooling idiot. Endowed with these four qualities, a monk is fit to stay in isolated forest and wilderness dwellings. Okay. This next discourse is the It's called the Danta Bhumi Sutta, the grade of the tamed. And it's about the, say, progressive modes of training. Thus have I heard. On one occasion, the Blessed One was living at Rajgaha in the bamboo grove, the squirrel sanctuary. Now, on that occasion, the novice Achiravatta was living in a forest hut. Then Prince Jayasena, while wandering and walking for exercise, went to the novice Achiravatta and exchanged greetings with him. When this courteous and amiable talk was finished, he sat down at one side and said to the novice Achiravatta, Master Agivesana, I have heard that a bhikkhu who abides here diligent, ardent, and resolute can achieve unification of mind. Prince Jayasena is one of the sons of King Bimbisara. That is so, Prince, that is so. A bhikkhu who abides here diligent, ardent, and resolute can achieve unification of mind. It would be good if Master Agivesana would teach me the Dhamma as he has heard it and mastered it. I cannot teach you the Dhamma, Prince, as I have heard it and mastered it. For if I were to teach you the Dhamma as I have heard it and mastered it, you would not understand the meaning of my words, and that would be wearying and troublesome for me. Let Master Agivesana teach me the Dhamma as he has heard it and mastered it. Perhaps I can understand the meaning of his words. I shall teach you the Dhamma, Prince, as I have heard it and mastered it. If you can understand the meaning of my words, that will be good. But if you cannot understand the meaning, then leave it at that and do not question me about it further. Let Master Agivesana teach me the Dhamma as he has heard it and mastered it. If I can understand the meaning of his words, that will be good. If I cannot understand the meaning, then I will leave it at that, and I will not question him about it further. Then the novice Achiravatta taught Prince Jayasena the Dhamma as he had heard it and mastered it. After he had spoken, Prince Jayasena remarked, It is impossible, Master Agivesana, it cannot happen that a bhikkhu who abides diligent, ardent, and resolute can achieve unification of mind. Then, having declared to the novice Achiravatta that this was impossible and could not happen, Prince Jayasena rose from his seat and departed. Soon after Prince Jayasena had left, the novice Achiravatta went to the Blessed One. After paying homage to the Blessed One, he sat down at one side and reported to the Blessed One his entire conversation with Prince Jayasena. When he had finished, the Blessed One said to him, Agivesana, how is it possible that Prince Jayasena, living in the midst of sensual pleasures, enjoying sensual pleasures, being devoured by thoughts of sensual pleasures, being consumed by the fever of sensual pleasures, bent on the search for sensual pleasures, could know, see, or realize that which must be known through renunciation, seen through renunciation, attained through renunciation, realized through renunciation? That is impossible. Suppose, Agivesana, there were two tameable elephants, horses or oxen, that were well tamed and well disciplined, and two tameable elephants, horses or oxen, that were untamed and undisciplined. What do you think, Agivesana? Would the two tameable elephants, horses or oxen, that were well tamed and well disciplined, being tamed, acquire the behavior of the tamed? Would they arrive at the grade of the tamed? Yes, Venerable Sir. But would the two tameable elephants, horses, or oxen, that were untamed and undisciplined, being untamed, acquire the behavior of the tamed? Would they arrive at the grade of the tamed, like the two tameable elephants, horses, or oxen, that were well tamed and well disciplined? No, Venerable Sir. So too, Agivesana, it is impossible that Prince Jayasena, living in the midst of sensual pleasures, enjoying sensual pleasures, being devoured by thoughts of sensual pleasures, being consumed by the fever of sensual pleasures, bent on the search for sensual pleasures, could know, see, or realize that which must be known through renunciation, seen through renunciation, attained through renunciation, realized through renunciation. Suppose, Agivesana, there were a high mountain not far from a village or town, and two friends would leave the village or town and approach the mountain hand in hand. Having reached it, one friend would remain below at the foot of the mountain, while the other would climb to the top. Then the friend who remained below at the foot of the mountain would say to the friend who stood on the top, "Well, friend, what do you see standing on top of the mountain?" And the other replied, "Standing on top of the mountain, friend, I see lovely parks, lovely groves, lovely meadows, and lovely ponds." Then the first friend would say, "It is impossible, friend. It cannot happen that while standing on top of the mountain you should see lovely parks, lovely groves, lovely meadows, and lovely ponds." Then the other friend would come down to the foot of the mountain, take his friend by the arm, and make him climb to the top of the mountain. After giving him a few moments to catch his breath, he would ask, "Well, friend, standing on top of the mountain, what do you see?" And his friend would reply, "Standing on top of the mountain, friend, I see lovely parks, lovely groves, lovely meadows, and lovely ponds." Then the other would say, "Friend, just a little earlier we heard you say, 'It is impossible, friend, it cannot happen, that while standing on top of the mountain you should see lovely parks, lovely ponds.' But just now we heard you say, 'Standing on top of the mountain, friend, I see lovely parks,' and so on." Then the first friend would reply, "Because I was obstructed by this high mountain, friend, I did not see what was there to be seen." So too, Agivesana, Prince Jayasena is obstructed, hindered, blocked, and enveloped by a still greater mass than this, the mass of ignorance. Thus it is impossible that Prince Jayasena, living in the midst of sensual pleasures, could know, see, or realize that which must be known through renunciation, seen through renunciation, attained through renunciation, realized through renunciation. Agivesana, if these two similes had occurred to you with reference to Prince Jayasena, he would have spontaneously acquired confidence in you, and, being confident, would have shown his confidence to you. Venerable Sir, how could these two similes have occurred to me with reference to Prince Jayasena as they occur to the Blessed One, since they are spontaneous and have never been heard before? Suppose, Agivesana, a head-anointed noble king addresses his elephant woodsman thus, "Good elephant woodsman, mount the king's elephant, enter the elephant wood, and when you see a forest elephant, bind him by the neck to the king's elephant." Having replied, "Yes, sire," the elephant woodsman mounts the king's elephant, enters the elephant wood, and when he sees a forest elephant, binds him by the neck to the king's elephant. The king's elephant leads him out into the open. It is in this way that a forest elephant comes out into the open, for the forest elephant clings to the elephant wood. Then the elephant woodsman informs the head-anointed noble king, "Sire, the forest elephant has come out into the open." The king addresses his elephant tamer thus, "Come, good elephant tamer, tame the forest elephant. Subdue his forest habits, subdue his forest memories and intentions, subdue his distress, fatigue, and fever over leaving the forest. Get him to take delight in the town, inculcate in him habits congenial to human beings." Having replied, "Yes, sire," the elephant tamer plants a large post in the earth and binds the forest elephant to it by the neck in order to subdue his forest habits and to inculcate in him habits congenial to human beings. Then the elephant tamer addresses the elephant with words that are gentle, pleasing to the ear, and lovable, as go to the heart, are courteous, desired by many, and agreeable to many. When the forest elephant is addressed by such words, he listens, gives ear, and exerts his mind to understand. The elephant tamer next rewards him with grass fodder and water. When the forest elephant accepts the grass fodder and water from him, the elephant tamer knows, now the king's elephant will live. Then the elephant tamer trains him further thus, take up, put down. When the king's elephant obeys his tamer's orders to take up and put down and carries out his instructions, the elephant tamer trains him further thus, go forward, go back. When the king's elephant obeys his tamer's orders to go forward and go back and carries out his instructions, the elephant tamer tames him further thus, get up, sit down. When the king's elephant obeys his tamer's orders to get up and sit down and carries out his instructions, the elephant tamer trains him further in the task called imperturbability. He ties a giant plank to his trunk. A man with a lance in his hand sits on his neck. Men with lances in their hands surround him on all sides, and the elephant tamer himself stands in front of him holding a long lance pole. When the elephant is being trained in the task of imperturbability, he does not move his forelegs or his hind legs. He does not move his forequarters or his hindquarters. He does not move his head, ears, tusks, tail, or trunk. The king's elephant is able to endure blows from spears, blows from swords, blows from arrows, blows from other beings, and the thundering sounds of drums, kettle drums, trumpets, and tom-toms. Being rid of all faults and defects, purged of flaws, he is worthy of the king, in the king's service, considered one of the factors of a king. So too, Agivesana, a Tathagata appears in the world, accomplished, fully enlightened. Gain faith, he shaves off his hair and beard, puts on the yellow robe, and goes forth from the home life into homelessness. It is in this way that a noble disciple comes out into the open, for gods and humans cling to the five cords of sensual pleasure. Then the Tathagata disciplines him further. Come, Bhikkhu, be virtuous, restrained with the restraint of the Patimokkha. Be perfect in conduct and resort, and seeing fear and the slightest fault, train by undertaking the training precepts. When Agivesana, the noble disciple, is virtuous and seeing fear in the slightest fault, trains by undertaking the training precepts, then the Tathagata disciplines him further. Come, Bhikkhu, guard the doors of your sense faculties. On seeing a form with the eye, do not grasp at it, at its signs and features, since if you were to leave the eye faculty unguarded, evil, unwholesome states of covetousness and grief might invade you. Practice the way of its restraint. Guard the eye faculty. Undertake the restraint of the eye faculty. On hearing a sound with the ear, on smelling an odor with the nose, on tasting a flavor with the tongue, on touching a tangible with the body, on cognizing a mind object with the mind, do not grasp at its signs and features, since if you were to leave the mind faculty unguarded, evil, unwholesome states of covetousness and grief might invade you. Practice the way of its restraint. Guard the mind faculty. Undertake the restraint of the mind faculty. When Agivesana, the noble disciple, guards the doors of his sense faculties, then the Tathagata disciplines him further. Come, Bhikkhu, be moderate in eating. Reflecting wisely, you should take food neither for amusement nor for intoxication, nor for the sake of physical beauty and attractiveness, but only for the endurance and continuance of this body, for ending discomfort, and for assisting the holy life, considering. Thus I shall terminate old feelings without arousing new feelings, and I shall be healthy and blameless, and shall live in comfort. When Agivesana, the noble disciple, is moderate in eating, then the Tathagata disciplines him further. Come, Bhikkhu, be devoted to wakefulness. During the day, while walking back and forth and sitting, purify your mind of obstructive states. In the first watch of the night, while walking back and forth and sitting, purify your mind of obstructive states. In the middle watch of the night, you should lie down on the right side in the lion's pose with one foot overlapping the other, mindful and fully aware, after noting in your mind the time for rising. After rising in the last watch of the night, while walking back and forth and sitting, purify your mind of obstructive states. When Agivesana, the noble disciple, is devoted to wakefulness, then the Tathagata disciplines him further. Come, Bhikkhu, be possessed of mindfulness and full awareness. Act in full awareness when going forward and returning, when looking ahead and looking away, when flexing and extending your limbs, when wearing your robes and carrying your outer robe and bowl, when eating, drinking, consuming food and tasting, when defecating and urinating, when walking, standing, sitting, falling asleep, waking up, talking, and keeping silent. When Agivesana, the noble disciple, possesses mindfulness and full awareness, then the Tathagata disciplines him further. Come, Bhikkhu, resort to a secluded resting place, the forest, the root of a tree, a mountain, a ravine, a hillside cave, a charnel ground, a jungle thicket, an open space, a heap of straw. He resorts to a secluded resting place, the forest, so on through, a heap of straw. On returning from his alms round, after his meal, he sits down, folding his legs crosswise, setting his body erect, and establishing mindfulness before him. Abandoning covetous for the world, he abides with a mind free from covetousness. He purifies his mind from covetousness. Abandoning ill will and hatred, he abides with a mind free from ill will, compassionate for the welfare of all living beings. He purifies his mind from ill will and hatred. Abandoning sloth and torpor, he abides free from sloth and torpor, percipient of light, mindful and fully aware. He purifies his mind from sloth and torpor. Abandoning restlessness and remorse, he abides unagitated with a mind inwardly peaceful. He purifies his mind from restlessness and remorse. Abandoning doubt, he abides having gone beyond doubt, unperplexed about wholesome states. He purifies his mind from doubt. Having thus abandoned these five hindrances, imperfections of the mind that weaken wisdom, he abides contemplating the body as a body, ardent, fully aware, and mindful, having put away covetousness and grief for the world. He abides contemplating feelings as feelings, mind as mind, mind objects as mind objects, ardent, fully aware, and mindful, having put away covetousness and grief for the world. Just as Agyavesana, the elephant tamer, plants a large post in the earth and binds the forest elephant to it by the neck in order to subdue his forest habits and to inculcate in him habits congenial to human beings, so these four foundations of mindfulness are the bindings for the mind of the noble disciple in order to subdue his habits based on the household life, to subdue his memories and intentions based on the household life, to subdue his distress, fatigue, and fever based on the household life, and in order that he may attain the true way and realize Nibbana. Then the Tathagata disciplines him further. Come, Bhikkhu, abide contemplating the body as a body, but do not think thoughts connected with the body. Abide contemplating feelings as feelings, but do not think thoughts connected with feelings. Abide contemplating mind as mind, but do not think thoughts connected with the mind. Abide contemplating mind objects as mind objects, but do not think thoughts connected with mind objects. With the stilling of applied and sustained thought, he enters upon and abides in the second jhana, the third jhana, the fourth jhana. When his concentrated mind is thus purified, he understands birth is destroyed, the holy life has been lived, what had to be done has been done. There is no more coming into any state of being. That bhikkhu is able to endure cold and heat, hunger and thirst, and contact with gadflies, mosquitoes, wind, the sun, and creeping things. He is able to endure ill-spoken, unwelcome words and arisen bodily feelings that are painful, racking, sharp, piercing, disagreeable, distressing, and menacing to life. Being rid of all lust, hate, and delusion, purged of flaws, he is worthy of gifts, worthy of hospitality, worthy of offerings, worthy of reverential salutations, an unsurpassed field of merit for the world. If Agyavesana, the king's elephant, dies in old age, untamed and undisciplined, then he is considered an old elephant that has died an untamed death. If the king's elephant dies when middle-aged, untamed and undisciplined, then he is considered a middle-aged elephant that has died an untamed death. If the king's elephant dies when young, untamed and undisciplined, then he is considered a young elephant that has died an untamed death. So too, Agyavesana, if an elder bhikkhu dies with his taints undestroyed, then he is considered an elder bhikkhu who has died an untamed death. If a bhikkhu of middle status dies with his taints undestroyed, then he is considered a bhikkhu of middle status who has died an untamed death. If a newly ordained bhikkhu dies with his taints undestroyed, then he is considered a newly ordained bhikkhu who has died an untamed death. If Agyavesana, the king's elephant, dies in old age, well-tamed and well-disciplined, then he is considered an old elephant that has died a tame death. If the king's elephant dies when middle-aged, well-tamed and well-disciplined, then he is considered a middle-aged elephant that has died a tame death. If a king's elephant dies when young, well-tamed and well-disciplined, then he is considered a young elephant that has died a tamed death. So too, Agyavesana, if an elder bhikkhu dies with his taints destroyed, then he is considered an elder bhikkhu who has died a tamed death. If a bhikkhu of middle status dies with his taints destroyed, then he is considered a bhikkhu of middle status who has died a tame death. If a newly ordained bhikkhu dies with his taints destroyed, then he is considered a newly ordained bhikkhu who has died a tame death. This is what the Blessed One said. The novice Acharyavatta was satisfied and delighted in the Blessed One's words.
Namayan dhammakathaya sadhukaram sathamam.